Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descansawan, KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
Today, we're honored to have with us Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Robert Lundahl, who will be talking about his new film, Who Are My People?, which documents threats to ancient Native American cultural resource sites across the Southwest. We'll be hearing the latest on some people who've been counting sheep out at the annual Bighorn Sheep Count in the Anza Borrego Desert. Ariel Brooks will tell you about the most fun festivals and events coming up this weekend. On People Power, we'll be hearing the inspiring story of a woman who survived being hit by a car after saving her child's life. We'll take you on a road trip to Santee Lakes. We'll hear from Native American flute player Jim Hannibal. And on Vines and Wines, we'll be hearing about the latest news about Ramona's fast-growing winemaking business. We'll also have some wildfire preparation tips for you and much more on today's edition of East County Magazine's radio show. Howdy! East County Magazine and KNSJ invite you to our Barbecue and Wild West Fest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Round up your friends and family for this fun-filled event. We'll have a Wild West show featuring the Hole-in-the-Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers reenacting scenes from our region's colorful Western past. The Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music, so grab your partner and bring your dancing shoes, or should we say cowboy boots. Plus, the Descanso Junction will be cooking up a tri-tip barbecue feast. We'll also have prizes and surprises at our Wild West Fest, which is all a benefit to support our wildfire reporting, alerts, and nonprofit community news. Yee-haw! Reservations are going fast, so save your spot now for our August 10th Wild West Fest. Call 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Today, you can also find more details at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery, and today I'm here with Robert Lundahl, an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker who has made a very powerful film titled Who Are My People? It's a film that has great significance for everyone who cares about Native American people and our public lands. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Miriam. It's really nice to be here. Who Are My People started 3 years ago, and I was called to Blythe, California, in the midst of a crisis, and that was that the first large solar projects were being sited for our desert lands, and they happened to be sited right on areas that were profound in that they are Native American geoglyphs that are visible from space, part of our cultural heritage in the United States and dear to Native American peoples and a big mystery for all.
These are absolutely amazing. There's a theory that they were created by the ancient Aztecs, according to one book that I just read by Alberto Figueroa. We have one of them, it should be said, right here in Ocotillo. There is an ancient spokewheel geoglyph. How many of these are there across the United States?
Along the Colorado River from Needles to Yuma, there are about 300 that have been documented. Mm-hmm. So that's a substantial number, and some of them are quite large, 200 feet in length. Many are human
forms. Two-thirds the size of a football field.
Right. And you wonder how they could have been built. They were built by moving rocks, one at a time, essentially.
Now, you shook things up when you showed up at a Bureau of Land Management meeting with your cameras rolling there and asked some tough questions about what kind of consultation was done mm-hmm. with Native American tribes before that Blythe project was built.
Right. Well, I had worked with a coalition to litigate 6 of the first 10 large solar projects in California on the basis that Native American peoples were not consulted and that the lands were not protected, as one might expect, under NEPA and CEQA and other environmental preservation acts.
So what was the answer you got from the BLM when you went in with the cameras rolling and asked that question?
Well, when I showed up at the first meeting, I was very polite, but they knew me by name and introduced me to their fellow colleagues at the BLM, and it was a little creepy.
And they basically said on camera, we don't remember if we consulted, we don't remember who we consulted with. They really didn't have any answers. It was pretty clear watching the film that it didn't look like a whole lot of consultation, if any, went on.
Well, I asked them at that meeting whether it was specifically a meeting to consult with Native American tribes under Section 106 or whether it was a public meeting. And they said, well, we're not sure.
Interesting.
Ask us in a moment.
Now, despite a huge outcry from the Native American community over this, they've likened this to building something on the Vatican, their sacred sites. And yet, one of these ancient geoglyphs, shockingly, was actually destroyed. You were there when the bulldozers were rolling for that. What was that like?
It was a surreal moment. You're out in the middle of the desert. It's a 105-degree day. All of this Native culture is astounding and surprising, and from my perspective, I was learning about it and where it was, and suddenly we see giant earth-moving equipment tearing up the desert, and I realized they're not just tearing up this part of the desert or that part of the desert. It's 9,500 acres of desert, which is quite a lot. And all this is Blythe Solar, by the way, which is a project originally started by Solar Millennium, and all around that area are numerous large geoglyphs that are evocative, beautiful, inspiring, and are related to the Blythe intaglios, which many people have seen. They're the human figures that are just outside of Blythe that are the only ones that are protected. But that's an entire complex where you go from one area to the other and you see this magic transform across the landscape in front of your eyes.
Now, there seems to be no level of protection that really protects these, and that's what was so shocking to me here in Ocotillo. The spokewheel geoglyph out there that is sacred to our local Kumeyaay Indians, that was also slated to have wind turbines go directly on top of it, and it has deep religious significance for tribes. They believe that this circle is the pathway to the spirit world and that you must leave a clear path for those who have departed to be able to travel to the Coyote Mountains, the sacred mountains in the background, and yet they wanted to completely obliterate this thing with wind turbines.
Right.
And the so-called compromise was they would just put them all around it and leave a little teeny tiny pie sliver. But yet this is an area that was used for sacred ceremonies for a very, very, very long time.
Well, it's the same thing in Blythe. There is a feature known as Sisi Meat, which is an Aztec figure. And our informant, Alfredo Figueroa, indicated that this is the figure, the energy that takes the souls of the dead to their spirit of final repose, which is over at Topak Maze, which is another giant feature.
Now, in Ocotillo, this was actually listed on the National Registry of Historic Places, as well as it had state and federal other levels of protection, yet none of that was enough. Is there any level of protection that these things can be given that would prevent this?
Well, here's what happened, Miriam, and this is part of the film. When the Obama administration began to lease lands for large-scale solar and wind, they were largely speculative, since the BLM does not have a depth of expertise in land use or anthropology or solar. And so investment firms like Goldman Sachs played a big role and bought up a lot of leases and sold them off to their friends. And there still wasn't much analysis of what the projects, in fact, were. One of our experts told us that if you had a PowerPoint and a $200 fee and were standing in line, you pretty much could pick up one of these leases. So it's a long road from that level of irresponsibility to something that makes sense in citing solar and wind, and that's the problem. I mean, the solar and wind are great, but they just did a lousy job. And in the era of Solyndra and, you know, large-scale grants from the ARRA stimulus program, this was a giveaway.
Now, the California Native American Heritage Commission ruled on behalf of Viejas recently that the Ocotillo Wind Farm should never have been built and that the Bureau of Land Management, the federal government, erred. This has been called the Valley of the Dead for 10,000 years, you know, a sacred cemetery, basically. And the Native American Heritage Commission basically said, what part of Valley of the Dead for 10,000 years didn't you get? One of them actually used those words. And they have actually asked the California Attorney General for a ruling on whether they have the power to litigate against the federal government over this or take further action. But several of the commissioners made very clear that they believed that the only appropriate remedy or mitigation would be to tear the Ocotillo Wind Project down. Now, how successful has your litigation, the groups you've been involved with, been against these giant solar projects that also were decimating Native American sites?
Well, in 2010, the complaints were filed against the Department of Energy and the Department of Interior related to six projects. Subsequent to that, the project applicants, which included companies like Chevron and Solar Millennium and Florida Power and Light through their subsidiary NextEra asked to join the fund and enter the legal process. And Lacuna de Atzlan, Sacred Sites Protection Circle, which was one of the original litigants, said that would just be fine. We're proud of our information and our story, and it doesn't matter. So what occurred after that is that because of numerous lawsuits on several projects, three of them are now dead. The Calico project, Imperial 2, the Imperial, which was also a nightmare, intended to be built upon Native American sacred
lands. Some of the local tribes were out protesting that one, and I know some of the Kumeyaay and some of the...
And the Kishan tribe. The Kishan tribe.
They did. That's right.
And another project called Chevron Lucerne in Lucerne Valley similarly died. So that was three down. One was built, which is the Genesis project by NextEra. And then we paid particular attention to fighting Solar Millennium's Blythe Solar project because of all of the geoglyphs there, and through just raising a lot of noise in the press and going global with press releases and news, put a lot of pressure on investors, and Solar Millennium at one point couldn't raise interim funds, and that impacted their bottom line and they went bankrupt. That project's been picked up on waivers, if you will, following. It's got a smaller footprint, but I would not invest in that project if I were an investor. Similarly, Ivanpah, the Ivanpah project, which is really a showcase for the large solar industry built outside of Las Vegas, had achieved success in getting their permits and built at least one tower of three, which is an enormous blight on the landscape. But it's still in federal court. So BrightSource has a problem because they have a huge investment and they're anticipating a federal court ruling from Lacuna de Atzlan's lawsuit that could very well require significant alterations of the project. And that could be devastating both to the project and to BrightSource. So BrightSource has a very poor track record. They have failed to convert two subsequent projects at Hidden Hills in Nevada and also Rio Mesa, which is in the film. Mm-hmm. I would not invest in BrightSource either. They're one for four, essentially.
Now, locally, there's yet another large wind project that's proposed on Bureau of Land Management land here in McCain Valley. And that is also an area where, while I'm not aware of any of these actual geoglyphs, there certainly are sacred sites, burial sites, and this was used by shamans in the past. I've actually been along when some of the tribal members hired forensic dog teams during the PowerLink phase through there to go through. And it didn't take them long for these dogs to alert on ancient remains. They're trained to find only 5,000-year-old remains. And yet the federal government has approved this project as well.
The Bureau of Land Management just does not have the expertise or the curiosity. They've historically been a land leasing organization, and it goes back to the Bush administration policies about leasing oil and gas.
Mm-hmm. And grazing.
Their marching orders have been, let's see how much we can lease, and that carried right over into solar and wind.
Yeah, it's pretty, a money-making machine, and it should be noted that taxpayers are footing the bill for defending all of these lawsuits now. I understand that you've gotten the attention of the California Public Utilities Commission with this film, and that there is some talk about possibly showing the movie to the commissioners. What's going on with that?
Yes, well, we've had one screening, and we anticipate more in different cities. But
the world premiere of it, we should add, was right here in San Diego a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it was a great event. A number of tribal communities sent many people, and also many local activists were there, and it was a lively, rousing evening, a lot of fun.
You'll find a story about it on eastcountymagazine.org.
Fantastic. So the Public Utilities Commission then had seen the press release, and I received a call from a staffer who's a wonderful guy. He's an attorney and a CEQA attorney. And so he's aware of the impacts that some of these projects have had and wanted to bring this to the attention of the decision-making body as a whole. And so we're now looking forward to a screening there. However, I understand there's a bit of an administrative challenge because he needs approval from division managers. And the word has come back that division managers don't want to sign off on the screening if it involves any anti-utility statements in the film.
Wait a minute. This is our Public Utilities Commission that's supposed to regulate the utilities, and they don't want to see something that has an anti-utility message?
That was quite literally what I got back. I think the division manager of policy and the division manager for energy made some kind of statement to that effect, and neither has signed off at this point. So
now, perhaps we shouldn't be so shocked, because this is the same commission where Commissioner Peavy himself and one of the other commissioners have been repeatedly accused of having overly cozy relationships with utility companies. They've been wined and dined on two continents by San Diego Gas and Electric Company, for example. And I know they've got an administrative law judge up there who was a former SDG&E attorney, and she was involved in blocking some of the statements by SDG&E officials involving the wildfires in court. So it does seem that there's a real problem there with the Public Utility Commission and just who exactly they're serving up there. Is there still a possibility that it will be shown?
Yes, actually there is, and I'm just looking forward to them resolving their internal disputes.
What can people do about that?
Well, I think you could write a letter to Michael Peavy.
The chairman of the California Public Utilities Commission.
Tell them that it's important for the commission to see this, because if they're making decisions that are favorable to utility-scale solar and not asking questions, then they need to hear from the people that are impacted. I mean, we have communities
that are
struggling.
Yeah, I would think it wouldn't hurt to let your elected officials up there in Sacramento know as well, because after all, the legislature ultimately does have the oversight over the Public Utilities Commission.
Right. These are people that are losing their community values. These are people that are losing their tribal identity, their cultural identity, their family identity, their sacred places, their beloved desert. You know, it matters. And these are not wealthy individuals that are fighting and litigating. These are essentially poor people that care an awful lot about what the environment that we have to share is. So this level of, you know, let's say ignorance on the behalf of public agencies is a betrayal of the public trust. They should know. They should be aware. At least take the information in.
Now, it's not just the Indians that are concerned about this, although they certainly have some very deep concerns. These are our public lands. And to put this in perspective, the last time I researched this a few months ago, I was pretty shocked to find out that 20 million acres of public lands in the U.S. are slated for industrial-scale solar projects and another 20 million for wind acres. That's massive.
Well, I wanted to mention Idle No More because the idea of this is a Native American problem or an environmental problem is a false dichotomy. It's both. And Idle No More, which is the Native American movement to protect lands and communities that began in Canada, has
protesting the Keystone Pipeline, which was going to bring the tar sand oil down here and is very environmentally destructive on tribal lands up there.
Right, and Native leader Teresa Spence said, we have enough poverty, we have enough ignorance of our needs, we don't need environmental destruction along the way. Well, the premise of that, of the movement, has been that in protecting Native lands, in protecting Native sovereignty, we protect lands for everyone.
How active is Idle No More down here?
Idle No More has a strong contingent in San Diego and Southern California, and they're getting stronger. Mm-hmm. As I said, this is a movement for all of our peoples and all of our communities to take part in saying that the environment is important, that renewable energy is important, but we need to be smart in how it's implemented. We need to think carefully about distributed energy and rooftop energy, and we can't just have this be a giant cash giveaway to the utility monopolies.
Yeah, this is actually happening around the world. We're seeing the same kind of thing going on, and from the Amazon to everywhere. You've had some interesting things to say about the nature of green and renewable, that it's not enough to just say something is renewable. You could make that argument about nuclear power, that it used to be called green because it didn't pollute the air and it didn't use fossil fuels. But as we've seen in Fukushima and Chernobyl, there are massive environmental consequences from that and social consequences as well.
Right.
Do we need to look at more than just sustainability as our mantra when we're looking at future energy policy?
Well, I'm a filmmaker, and I was, of course, shocked and saddened by what I saw in front of the lens. But I also had to think, how do I frame this discussion? What do I really feel about it, and what do I want to say? And it became really clear to me that you can't have green without social justice.
And we are the Network for Social Justice on KNSJ 89.1 FM. Robert, where can people see the film or get more information about this fascinating issue?
The website for the film is http://whoaremypeople.com. And there's information there about future screenings and about how you can purchase a DVD or how you can access the video on video on demand.
Well, very good. Thank you very much for joining us here on the East County Magazine show today.
Thank you, Miriam.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. The 4th of July festivities may be over, but there are all kinds of activities this week all over East County. And don't forget the local car shows, summer concerts, and movies after dark at the park that are happening all summer long. Listen for details on these recurring events on Destination East County. Descanso Days Back to the Old West on Saturday, July 13th will feature a parade at 10 a.m., followed by live music and a fair all day long. The fair is presented by the Descanso Town Hall Association at the historic Town Hall. Live music will include a steel kettle drum band, Just Friends Bluegrass, Breaking Bad, and Barbed Wire Country Western. Native American dancer Eric Running Path will also perform. A kids' fun zone will feature games, a teepee, and Indian sand painting. A game-on-game theater located inside an air-conditioned 55-foot semi-trailer will have video games, music, laser lights, and more. Vendor booths and opportunity drawings will round out the event. Also this weekend, you can savor English high tea at Keys Creek Lavender Farm in Valley Center on Saturday or Sunday from 2 to 4 p.m. Reservations are required for the teas, which serve appetizers, sandwiches, petite sweets, and an assortment of rich flavored teas. On Saturday night, July 13th, the whole family can enjoy outdoor fun flicks for a free showing of Rise of the Guardians, starting at dusk at Sycamore Canyon Preserve in Lakeside. Viejas also hosts free movies in the park, with showings of The Dark Knight on Thursday, July 11th, and The Hunger Games on Sunday, July 14th, in the park at the Viejas Outlet Center. The Golden State Historic Railway Train runs each Saturday evening at the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo in July and August, allowing visitors to ride the rails through East County's rugged scenic backcountry. All summer long, you can also find free concerts on Friday nights in downtown El Cajon, on Sundays at 6 p.m. in La Mesa's Harry Griffin Park, and at Santee's Town Center Community Park every Thursday evening from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Santee's next event is a blues and barbecue coming up on July 18th. Classic car aficionados can also check out La Mesa's Back to the 50s every Thursday night in the downtown village, as well as El Cajon's Classic Car Nights each Wednesday evening all summer long. Plus, mark your calendars for July 27th when three big events are happening: Pine Valley Days, the Music in the Mountains Festival, and Watermelon Days at the Oasis Camel Dairy in Ramona. More on those coming up soon. KNSJ invites you to the station's launch party August 3rd at Mission Trails Regional Park. Plus, East County Magazine and KNSJ will be hosting a barbecue and Wild West Fest August 10th at the Descanso Town Hall. Watch for details and reservations on our websites. You can find details on these events and more on our calendar of events and in our festivals section at www.eastcountymagazine.org. Send information on your major events to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Have a great week, and we'll see you around East County.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
In East County, counting sheep isn't what you do to fall asleep. Earlier this month, volunteers braved 112-degree heat to participate in the 43rd annual Bighorn Sheep Count in the Anza-Borrego Desert State Park. The Peninsular Bighorn Sheep is an endangered species. Only about 950 of them remain in the United States, with another 2,000 or so in Mexico, according to the Bighorn Institute. In recent years, sheep populations in the Southwest have been stressed by drought, disease, and development encroaching on their habitat in rugged, rocky terrain. This year's count in Anza-Borrego had both good news and bad news. Coordinators Steve Beer and Mark Jorgensen report that this year, volunteers counted 332 bighorn, the second largest sheep count in the park's history. But the numbers don't tell the whole story. The count did not include some portions of the park where sheep populations are under the most stress, and at least two dead sheep were found during the count due to apparent dehydration. Darren Sefcik, a photographer who participated in this year's count, said there were not enough resources to count sheep in the southern end of the park. The southern area of the park borders the new Ocotillo Express wind facility, which fragments bighorn territory and produces infrasound that some environmentalists have warned could be disruptive to the sheep, possibly driving them out of that portion of their territory or preventing movement through the wind facility to reach water sources. The federal government delisted the wind site as critical bighorn habitat. After an East County Magazine investigation proved the existence of threatened bighorn on the site, complete with photos showing ear tracking tags, GPS information, and date stamps, the U.S. Department of Interior issued take permits to the developer Pattern Energy, allowing up to 10 bighorn ewes and lambs to be killed inadvertently with no liability to the wind project developer. This year's high count could be inflated due to sheep venturing into more visible locations in search of water, or perhaps moving away from those wind turbines in the south. Sefcik said that numbers this year were high, but only due to the drought, as the sheep were desperate for water. Then he revealed, "We had one dead at our site when we arrived, and another die during the first day of counting. It really is that bad right now. Many of the year-round reliable water sources have dried up." 20 locations were included in this year's count. The most sheep, 48, were found at First Grove Palm Canyon. Ironically, at Sheep Canyon, no sheep were found this year. If you would like to help improve the count for next year to reach more areas, you can get involved and volunteer to be a sheep counter at the annual count organized by the Anza Borrego Foundation. For information, visit www.theabf.org. That's www.theabf.org.
This is a breaking news alert live from the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service.
This is Shalay Sasan with a special report on wildfire preparedness from KNSJ's East County Magazine radio show and the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. Already this year, California had over 1,500 wildfires, an 85% increase over an average year caused by extreme drought conditions. Now is the time to prepare for what is shaping up as a tougher-than-usual fire season, said Supervisor Diane Jacob. The firestorms of 2003 and 2007 taught us that homes with defensible space are far more likely to survive than homes without it, the supervisor added. Defensible space is an area around the home where plants and trees are maintained to prevent fire from spreading quickly. A buffer zone gives firefighters a better chance to make a stand and save your home during a wildfire. Fire officials recommend clearing away dry brush to form a 100-foot buffer zone around your home. The buffer could include hardscaping such as tile, stone, or concrete patios and walkways, or fire-resistant landscaping such as succulents. Trim tree branches 6 feet above the ground so that low-hanging branches won't become ladders to spread of wildfire. Be sure to have a family evacuation plan in place and assemble a 72-hour survival kit. You can download it at readysandiego.org. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts provides free alerts via email for major wildfires and other regional emergencies countywide. Sign up at www.eastcountymagazine.org, where you can find timely news stories posted live during emergencies. You can also follow Viejas Alerts on Twitter to receive alerts on your mobile phone. In addition, you can also register with Alert San Diego, the region's reverse 911 system at readysandiego.org. During an emergency, you can also consult sdcountyemergency.com, the county's website with evacuation updates and maps.
This is Janice Mork, host of People Power, profiling people and organizations making a positive difference in our community and our world.
Today I'm talking with Johanna Guzman, a Santee resident. Johanna Guzman is a former patient from Sharp Rehab and is one of this year's Victories of Spirit recipients. Victories of Spirit honors those who have turned personal tragedy into triumph. Now, what happened with you was that you had a car accident on April 7th, 2010, and you and your two-year-old son Joshua were affected. So can you tell us about the accident?
Yes, I remember when I was walking from the park to my house with my son. But I can't remember when my accident happened exactly. I can't remember few hours before and day before, but I can't remember when the accident happened. But I think my son, he ran into the street. When I tried to catch him, the car hit me and he flew into the air. A neighbor, he found Joshua 40 feet away, and I was unconscious in the ground.
And so you suffered multiple fractures and a brain injury, and then you were in a coma for 2.5 weeks. So how did you feel coming out of it?
When I woke up, I was confused. I was terrified because I couldn't understand why I'm here, why I was here in the hospital, what happened with my son, what happened with my body, because I couldn't move. I couldn't do the same things before I did. It was so, so hard for me because I was in the hospital. It's a horrible place to wake up.
Wow.
One day, yeah.
And so you received physical, occupational, and speech therapy. And what kept you going? What motivated you to keep going?
I think my big motivation, it was my son and my family, my husband, and my life, because I love life. I think it's the biggest motivation in my life. My son is there because he needs me, and I need him. I need to keep going forward. I need to keep going to teach him. I need to be good for me and for him and for my son, my husband, for my family.
Oh, what a great attitude. So how difficult was therapy for you?
Therapy was so difficult for me because I couldn't do anything by myself. Walking was the hardest thing to recover, but I never felt like giving up. I was always thinking about my future and my family, always.
So what did your husband Nicholas do to support you during therapy?
Yeah, he's the best. He was with me all the time, every afternoon, after work, and weekends. He took care of our son, and he always gave me his love and motivation to keep going forward. Always he did that.
Very supportive. And how did your son Joshua cope with you being in therapy?
When my accident happened, he was 2 years old. It was hard for Joshua because I was still his mom, but I couldn't do the same things for him. But with time and love and patience, our relationship changed, and every day it was better and better, and both of us felt more confident and happy. I want to teach him by example that everything is possible, and we are here in this planet because God wants everybody to be happy and enjoy big and small things. I think it's the most important thing.
Very good. Now you're giving back, and one way is through peer mentoring. So how long have you been peer mentoring?
I have always thought that helping others is our most important mission in life. After my accident, I thought I could now continue helping, giving my love, courage, and strength to those who go through a situation as difficult as I did. For example, I met Zachary Menno in the hospital. He had a stroke and he was very, very sad. I want to support him and show him life was open for every dream he has. And now he is one of the winners of the Victory Awards with me. We are warriors.
Oh, great attitude, Johanna.
Thanks, Janice.
You also volunteer at Casa Estrella Orphanage in Rosarito, Mexico. How did you get involved?
I heard about Casa Estrella Orphanage through a Colombian friend. She does volunteering for the orphanage. And one day I talked with her and decided to go help. They are a big group of beautiful girls with dreams and hopes. We spend time with them, organize fun activities, and be a part of their other lives.
You also volunteer at your son's school, Rio Seco, and he is now 5, I understand. So what are some of the activities that you get involved in?
I started a few months ago, and I do help the teacher with arts and crafts, and to paint, to cut things for them, and to be fun with the teacher and the kids.
So what would you say to those listening that are going through a difficult time?
Hard times are opportunities to be better. Inner strength helps us to see clearly the value of life, I think. We must never give up our dreams. Keep positive attitude as much as possible. And remember, everything is possible for God and for us. When people do everything with heart, with passion, with love, with big motivation. I think it's the key to be happy. It's the key to pass through away the hard times, to beginning again.
Very nice. Thank you for sharing your story with us. For East County Magazine, you can read the story on www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Are you a military member or veteran? The County of San Diego's Health and Human Services Agency is hosting a forum at the El Cajon Library on July 18th from 4 to 6 p.m. The forum seeks to gather information that will help service members make a successful transition to civilian life. Information collected about the needs of veterans, active military, reservists, National Guard, and Coast Guard will help county behavioral health officials develop the next phase of the Courage to Call program. Courage to Call is a peer-to-peer support group run by veterans for veterans. It operates 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and offers services to active and former military members, their families, and loved ones. To register, call 619-563-2762 or email gina.brown@sdcounty.ca. You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 Descanso, serving San Diego and East County, and streaming live worldwide on knsj.org.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
So we're here at Santee Lakes, and we're at the Spray Ground. This looks like fun. Yeah, Miriam?
It does. There's lots of little kids in there splashing around, getting all wet.
And why don't we have one of these for adults?
Good idea, Mike.
Looks like fun.
It does.
Hello, I'm Mike Hancock. We're on the road in the East County. We're here with Jonathan Skinner with Santee Lakes. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing good, Mike. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for taking some time out to talk to us today and tell us all about what's happening at Santee Lakes.
We're really excited about our property and what we do here. We're a community asset. We've been out here since over 50 years, offering recreational opportunities for the community. And when I say the community, I'm not just talking Santee. I'm talking about La Mesa and El Cajon and Alpine. They're part of that 750,000 people that we have come here every year.
That's a lot of people coming to Santee Lake. So, Jonathan, can you take us back to the beginning of Santee Lakes and tell us how it all started?
When it was the Santee Water District, there was a challenge that we had. And basically, we do reclaim water. The Water District does reclaim water. But we were shipping it down to San Diego, and we had an opportunity either to maintain that or to find a way to handle the water ourselves. And Ray Stoyer, the general manager at the time, decided to make it a way that we can take care of recycled water here, and the recreation came as an afterthought. We started actually working with the environmental community to get it approved to have reclaimed water used for recreation, so that's really, really exciting.
So it's a green operation, the reclamation of the water?
Yeah, we actually have a very big plant north of us, and it recycles 2 million gallons of water a day.
This is Miriam Raftery, and I understand this has become an international model. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, you know, when you look at reclaimed water, a lot of times they just take it and, you know, use it for irrigation and other sources. What we were able to do is find a way to make it for recreational use. When Ray Stoyer started this project back in the 50s and 60s, he was able to get approval to have limited contact with the water, but also use it for recreation. So if you take a look in our general store where we're just at, you'll see pictures of, we had sailboats. So we will be bringing them back. Exactly when, I'm not sure, but we will be bringing that back. We have fishing that started back then. We currently stock over 38,000 pounds of fish between trout and catfish a year.
You also added camping.
If you took pictures of our old campsite, it was very primitive. And now we're on, I would say, part of the state-of-the-art of camping. We went from under 100 sites to now over 300 sites. We've also included cabins. 3 of them are floating, and 7 of them are on shore.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the floating cabins.
It was a labor of love from our previous director, who is now our general manager, Alan Carlisle. He was approached, and the park was approached, from people who didn't have tents. They didn't have trailers, but they wanted to come camping. So through a lot of research, and support from the board of directors, we found a way to have cabins, which are basically trailers that are stationary. We have them on Lake 7. It's absolutely beautiful. So three of them are floating cabins. We actually have a dock that goes up to them, and they're floating, and then we have seven land cabins.
So they're anchored.
They don't just travel around, which is a very good question, because when people ask to reserve and they say, well, am I going to be floating? You're going to be floating, but you're going
to
be stationary.
It'd be hard to get a good night's rest.
So you won't get seasick.
Well, we haven't had anybody get seasick yet.
What else is in your dream list there for Santee Lakes for the future?
Well, you know, that's a really good question, Miriam, because right now we're doing a master plan for the park. The last one we had, which was the 21-21 plan, came up with a lot of great opportunities and projects for us, which we completed. But currently what we're looking at is expanding our recreational opportunities. Some of the things that have been talked about is a zip line.
Hey.
We want to do some shore restoration, which is going to increase some of our picnicking opportunities, some retrofits that we have for the back of the park, upgrading things that have been here since, not the beginning, but since the 70s.
They also have various things that you can rent to go see the lake.
Some of the amenities we've had for a couple of years is our pedal boats, which is really, really big. They either have it for two people or five people, and it's primarily right now on Lake 5, which our goal is to also put them on Lake 1. It's one of our biggest lakes. One of our newest additions that we got in 2012 are our Surreys and our bikes. Now, if you haven't seen a Surrey, there's a song about it with a Surrey on top. So it's a two-person or four-person bike, and you can actually fit as many as six adults and two kids up front. It's a great way to see the park up front, but it's also great exercise, and you'll be able to see that when you go out on it.
Right.
Yeah, that sounds good.
And so we're going to take you on a tour and go pedal around the lake and look at some of the sights.
Okay, so we set off on the Surrey, and here we are at Santee Lake, driving around, and we're going the wrong way.
Not at the lake, though. How do we break it?
Oh, the brake's right here. You see something bad about to happen.
Just yank it. Okay.
Yeah, cool. We want to go to the left. Is this the way we're supposed to go? So we're not supposed to go on the sidewalk. This thing really moves. Let me know if you want to drive.
Cool. Here we go.
I don't think we could go uphill anyway, even if we try.
We are on the road in Santee Lake.
We got a wave, too.
Yeah. Huh?
I think we're going to park it right here.
Jonathan, tell us about some of the fun activities that you've got planned this summer out at Santee Lakes.
Well, starting on June 21st, we start our movie series, and we call it Movies by the Lake. It's on Lake 5, absolutely beautiful.
Bring the popcorn.
Definitely bring your popcorn. Yeah, it's like a drive-in movie, and we encourage people to bring their picnic baskets and their blankets. We have games for the kids, and we also, at certain ones, we have bands who come and play. There's a special concert that is here for the Rotary, which is Concerts at the Lakes. That one, they have two bands, one called Ramshackle, which play a lot of the newer music, and then they have four lads from Liverpool. And that is Beatles tribute band.
Jonathan, thank you very much for joining us today. And where can people get more information about Santee Lakes?
Well, they can go to our website, which is www.santeelakes.com, or they can visit us on Facebook and like us on Facebook, or they can call us at 619-596-3141.
We'll be back again next week with another edition of On the Road in East County.
You're listening to East County Magazine, the voice of East County. We reflect your interests, the people's interest, not special interest. As a nonprofit, we rely on community support. You can help us provide community news and reflect a rich diversity of voices by donating or becoming a sustaining member at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Lynn Moneyfire is bringing you the Tribal Beat, covering the news for and about our region's Native American communities. Today's guest on Tribal Beat is Jim Hannibal. Jim is a member of the Blackfoot Nation and a born and raised San Diego native. Jim is multi-talented. He teaches automotive technology and electronics at Cuyamaca College. A passionate flute maker, he writes and performs his own music. A member of the Four Winds Band, he has traveled the nation sharing the beauty and passion of his spirit through his music. And listeners, I'd like to share that Jim created our introduction music, and I'm honored to have his music lead us into these conversations with the community. Good morning, Jim. Thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
Jim, your music and the flutes you create have an uplifting, almost inspirational quality. What is it that inspires you?
the music that's present in other people. It's just, I can see the music and I feel the music within their hearts. I can look around the topography of the ground and also the silhouettes of the trees. Mm-hmm. And I sense and I feel the energy and the music that's present within them.
How is it that you create your music?
It comes to me inward first. From the surroundings, I internalize it, and then it's just something that I need to bring forward so I can actually hear it through my flutes.
So it's kind of a spontaneous thing that comes from the center of you, right?
Yes, it is.
Mm. What are you most proud of accomplishing?
The relationship that I have with the Creator, being able to hear the Creator invite me to do things. For instance, the most important thing that stands out in my mind is being able to be a witness of a home fire where I saw that there wasn't any emergency vehicles or people around. I was just called to show up and to help.
Mm.
And I went to the home. The door was locked. I went to reach for rocks around, but there weren't any. I was going to break the window of the door, but I couldn't. I was going to then break it with my hand, and before I could do that, the door opened. And surprisingly, there wasn't anyone standing on the other side of the door. I was able to, at that time, look inside the hallway, and I saw feet at the other end. I was able to remove the woman from her home, and who later on, after she revived, informed me that her dog was tethered to the front porch, and the porch was fully engulfed in flames. And at that time, I heard a voice that told me that I would be completely safe and for me to trust him. And about that time, a calm came over me, and I was actually able to go to the porch with these flames and untether this scared dog and get back safely and give the lady her dog.
I bet she was grateful you could hear the Creator at that point, huh?
And I'm glad I was able to as well.
Mm. What makes your heart sing?
Well, being able to help people. With my profession as a teacher, I'm able to not only help the students in my classroom, but students in other classrooms, whether it be preschool, elementary, all the way up to university level. I'm able to teach them the things that I've learned in life, whether it be the culture, history, and artwork of Native American people, or just things that I've learned in general.
Giving back to the community, right?
That is something that I feel very important.
And it is important. What's next for you, Jim?
Well, I often play at Mission Trails Regional Park and also at Heritage of the Americas Museum at Cuyamaca College and other numerous places, whether it be for weddings, funerals, parties, you name it.
Great. Where can people contact you?
They could contact me either through my phone number or my email. My phone number is area code 619-403-3985. And my email is flutemaker5, that's with the number 5, at yahoo.com.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for sharing your story with us today. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Tribal Beat. If you have a story you'd like to hear more about or a person of interest in the community, contact us at tribalbeat@eastcountymagazine.org.
This is Rebecca Lightbound. I'm here with East County Magazine editor Miriam Raftery on KNSJ 89.1, the Network for Social Justice. Miriam, what is the definition of social justice?
Rebecca, that's a great question, and it's all about justice for all people within our society.
But what does that mean in 2013?
Today, social justice includes many things. Here in East County, it could include the rights of rural residents, such as small farmers, or communities with environmental justice issues, for example, people living near big energy projects like the wind farms where there are health issues not being addressed.
And what else?
Well, of course, social justice includes ethnic and religious minorities, such as our many Native Americans, Latinos, and Iraqi Chaldeans in our region, but it also includes the poor and the homeless. It could include speaking out on issues impacting the elderly or our children. It also includes issues facing working people, as well as issues facing small business owners who are the backbone of our economy right here in East County.
Are there any other voices that would not be included?
On East County Magazine's show, our goal is to include all voices in the community, though we make a special effort to include those voices not being heard elsewhere.
Will the show cover issues beyond social justice?
Yes, it will. In addition to stories on social justice, we'll also include a wide variety of topics, such as the top news each week, features on local musicians. We'll be telling you about the most exciting festivals and events every week, as well as specialty topics such as gardening, our local wine industry, energy and environment issues, restaurant reviews, wildfire alerts, people and organizations doing positive things for our community and our world.
Thanks for that information. We look forward to listening to the new twist on social justice issues right here in East County.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Today we're going to introduce you to Terry and Michael, and they are the owners of the Ramona Ranch Winery. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about yourselves.
Well, Mike and I are both from a small town on the Oregon coast. Ramona appealed to us because of its rural nature, open spaces, and the opportunity to have horses and farm, all of which we're lucky to do.
Well, it's beautiful up here, I can tell you that much. How did you guys actually get started?
Well, we moved up to Ramona in 2004, and in 2005 we saw an invitation to attend a meeting of the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association. These meetings were held in people's homes, and we went, met a great group of people, and decided that it seemed like something we were interested in. We were invited to come and help out at harvest, and we were hooked.
Nice. And you started making your first wines that year? How did that work?
Well, we were paid for our labor, so to say, with 100 pounds of Syrah grapes. And we made our first batch of wine that year in 06. And then we installed our first vineyard later that year and have been just growing each year, getting a little more and more entrenched into the wine business.
Making more and more and more.
More and more. And Michael, you have your own vineyard installation business now. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I started that recently, and I'm just trying to grow the region, the Ramona Valley area, and got a lot of people interested in planting grapes and just want to grow the region to make some great wine.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful growing environment up here. I understand that the Ramona Valley has its own AVA, which for our fans and listeners means American Viticulture Area. What's so special about Ramona?
Well, Ramona is unique, and I think when people drive up the hill to Ramona, they're surprised by the rocky outscapes. Mm-hmm. It almost looks like we're on another planet, and some people have told me it looks like the south of France. So it's ideal for growing grapes. Grapes were grown in San Diego County before Prohibition. It was a huge grape area, and grapes like the same things we do. They like hot days, cool evenings, a little breeze. So you add in Ramona's rocky soil, our south-facing slopes, and you have perfect growing conditions, which made us unique and recognized as an AVA.
I also understand that Ramona Ranch is also the co-owners of one of my favorite new little magazines, the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine. When did this get launched?
That got launched like many great things, sitting around the table one Friday evening with a bunch of friends, drinking some good local wines,
and
we thought somebody needed to tell the story, so why not us as insiders and really starting out? We thought, well, let's do it. So we launched the magazine in 2011.
It's a good one too, folks.
Thanks. Our goal is to educate both the consumer and our growing trade. Mm-hmm. Ramona is a fairly new wine region. There's around 81 vineyards in Ramona right now.
Wow.
Like Mike said, more and more going in all the time. So we thought, well, there's a story here to tell. So we partnered with our friend Dave Billick, who has 30 years of publishing experience. And actually, the magazine was his idea. And we said, you know, you bring the publishing experience, we'll bring the vineyard and winery experience, and we're off and running. It's free online. It has the most up-to-date map of our region with 21 tasting rooms now up in and around Ramona.
So what's the email address to that so people can check it out?
Yeah, it's free online. It's www.ramonavalleywineregion.com. And I encourage your listeners to check it out and let us know what they think.
With the new micro-vineyard boutique winery ordinance passing, what can your guests expect, you know, when they come out to see you guys?
They can expect to meet the winemakers, the owners, and the joke around here is that Napa spills more wine than Ramona makes in a year. So it's very small, intimate.
So we also make extremely limited quantities, so usually only one barrel of each varietal. So when it's gone for our listeners. That's 24 cases of wine, so very small production.
Very nice.
And I use the analogy that boutique or artisan wines are similar to artisan breads that you might pick up at the farmer's market. Every batch is completely different. It's unique. It's made by hand. It's not mass-produced. We don't use any machines in the making of our wines. So from the planting of the vines to the harvest and winemaking, we do everything by hand with extreme care to the quality. Great example is at our last harvest, we sorted 5,000 pounds of Sangiovese by hand, removing every shot berry or unripe berry, stems, leaves. We call it MOG, material other than grapes. You don't really want that in your wine at fermentation, and we're small enough to be able to sort through and pick every single one of those out.
Well, that's an awful lot of work for just two of you.
We round up all of our friends and we turned it into a party. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, life's a party at the vineyard for sure. One last question before we close here. Where can our listeners come to experience your wines?
We're open on Saturdays from noon to sunset, and details are available at the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine or on our website, ramonaranch.net. We also are open on the occasional Sunday, although Mike and I still have full-time jobs during the week, so we try and take Sundays off, but we will open up on occasion or for private parties or by appointment. So I invite anyone who's interested in wine and the experience to take the time to come up to Ramona Valley. Again, there are currently 21 tasting rooms, and any one of us that you stop in can help you plan a special day in the country, and we're really just 35 minutes up the hill from San Diego.
It's beautiful up here. Come up and visit our good friends up in Ramona and come and visit the wine region. Thanks so much for your time today. Hope everybody enjoyed meeting Michael and Terry.
Thanks, Greg, for coming up. We appreciate it.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Maness, proprietor of the Maness Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manisvineyards.com.
And Amera Media Production.
Attention, Earthlings. Comic-Con International starts July 18th. If you are planning on attending, be aware that parking downtown fills up and is difficult to find during the event. The Metropolitan Transit System will have enhanced trolley service for the Green Line starting on Wednesday preview night. The Green Line, which serves many East County communities, will take you directly to the station in front of the convention center. The Orange Line will also operate on an extended schedule during the event, and you can transfer to the Green Line at the Grossmont Center Transit Station or the Santa Fe Train Depot. Day passes provide unlimited rides on all trolley lines and most MTS bus routes as well. If you choose to buy day passes, you will need an MTS card. MTS will release commemorative Comic-Con 2-day, 3-day, 4-day, and 5-day passes at ticket booths at select trolley stations, or the transit store at 102 Broadway in downtown San Diego. Most importantly, have a great time at Comic-Con.
Howdy! East County Magazine and KNSJ invite you to our Barbecue and Wild West Fest on Saturday, August 10th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the historic Descanso Town Hall in Descanso. Round up your friends and family for this fun-filled event. We'll have a Wild West show featuring the Hole in the Wall Gang and the Gaskell Brothers reenacting scenes from our region's colorful Western past.
The Pine Creek Posse Band will provide live music, so grab your partner and bring your dancing shoes, or should we say cowboy boots. Plus, the Descanso Junction will be cooking up a tri-tip barbecue feast. We'll also have prizes and surprises at our Wild West Fest, which is all a benefit to support our wildfire reporting, alerts, and nonprofit community news. Yee-haw! Reservations are going fast, so save your spot now for our August 10th Wild West Fest. Call 619-698-7617 or email editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Today, you can also find more details at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Menashe, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection,
and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.